Hello and welcome to Real Geeks. I am Crash and Burn, and with me as always is Mike Montgomery.
Hey.
And for those listeners who are boarding in first class only, get out of the way, you fucking plebs. This is a treat. This film is like some weird throwback to a bunch of movies that they don't make anymore because there's absolutely no sequel potential, or at least that's not how you're supposed to approach it. Let me explain. This is a really, really, really basic, really plain movie. No frills. Economy class. This is Gerard Butler's latest and greatest plane.
Captain Torrance, Flight Commander. How can I help you?
Fugitive extradition.
Oh, is he dangerous? What did he do?
Homicide 15 years ago.
I don't want to scare the rest of the passengers.
I'm afraid you're stuck with us, Captain.
Get him on board. Let's have a good flight. We're cutting right through the top of the storm. Listen, keep everybody in their seats. No exceptions, all right?
Getting everyone to have their seatbelts securely fastened.
Mayday, mayday, mayday. Trailblazer 119, we are dark.
Is anyone near guard, damn it?
We're gonna hit.
They went down somewhere in the Jolo Island cluster. It's run by separatists and militias. The Filipino army won't even go there anymore. The clock is ticking. Every minute matters. We can count those minutes in lives, lost or saved.
Get back. We don't know who it is. Get back.
Listen carefully. This is an emergency. I'm Captain Brody Torrance.
I like this guy.
Name! Country!
Maxwell Carville, England.
Name. Country.
I better go after them.
My passengers, my responsibility.
I'm gonna need your help.
You're gonna need this.
Form a military or something?
You could say that.
Then why'd they lock you up?
No one cares what really happened. But they say redemption can be found in the most unusual places. If you do this, you'll probably never see your family again.
What about their families?
I have a daughter, and I have every intention of making a home. They are going to come at us with everything they've got.
We're getting off this island.
I mean, seriously, that's a pretty fucking, like, that's a really basic name. I understand there's movies like critically acclaimed action films like Drive, but Plane!
And I think my favorite thing about that is the title was Gerard Butler's idea. Like, the studio wanted to call it something else, fuck knows what, but Butler was like, no, we're going to keep it simple. We're going to call it Plane.
It's just called Plane. It's plane on a plane.
Kind of makes it even funnier the simple fact that between my discovery of this movie and the start of this recording, I'm pretty sure that I have accidentally in my head called it Pilot or like three other utterly different things.
Yeah, like better actual titles than Plane, especially since most of the movie doesn't actually take place on plane.
Yeah, like I don't know how, but somehow for a title this basic, I have fucked up this title more than Birds of Prey: The Fantabulous Emancipation of One Harley Quinn.
That's because that takes like actual active memory, and you have to think, okay. Fantabulous, right? Because that's a made-up ass word, even more so than most. But like, plane is It's like, well, actually, in many ways, this movie is like Airplane, in that you can't just call your movie Airplane. That's what it, that's where it takes place. You can't just call it that. Plane! Yeah, this is a beautiful film, because in any other regard, it should be a parody or an embarrassment. And yet,
yeah,
I kind of really enjoyed it. I enjoy it in the same sense as I enjoy a Michael Crichton that I pick up for $2. By the end of it, do I feel smarter? No. Have I learned anything? Not really. But you know what? It was a fun ride, and I still get to look down on those Dan Brown bastards and go, well, at least I'm not you. I have some taste. And there's yeah, no reason why it has that. It's because this is an idea from the novelist Charles Cumming, who does that exact level of, like, airport burner.
Which, yeah, and it's also fascinating how this is something that was kind of nagging at me since I first saw the trailer, but this is a Gerard Butler film that is a vehicle for Mike Coulter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really fascinating. Gerard Butler is kind of, he's your straight man. He's the rudder to this, but the flair is Mike Coulter.
Yeah.
He's showing off how badass and virile and youthful and badass again he is, while Jared Butler's like, I'm old, I'm Scottish, ah! Like, this is, when I first saw the trailer for it and Plane came up, I was expecting something else. I was expecting, quite frankly,
yeah,
Plane Has Fallen. It's a much better title, and it ties it to a previous set of films he's done. But it would make so much sense, and it kind of is the same character of, like, what does that character do after he has saved the world a bunch of times? I mean, realistically, probably, like, writes a book, goes on a speaking tour, blah, 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 blah. But for the purpose of these cheesy-ass films, I could so see him being like, oh, I got my pilot's license. I might as well just go and, like, fly commercial aircraft. I'll never run into a situation where I'll have to shoot someone again. And then this happens. That would be the proper escalation of, no matter where this character goes, an absurd shitstorm follows, regardless of if he's, like, with the president or the Queen of England, or just, like, flying the shit ass cheap lame hours, like the back shift of a back shift budget fucking aircraft, and he still ends up in what is not a far cry away from a certain video game series. I thought of that one last night.
Number one, I understood that reference. And number
I understood that reference.
And number two, your entire premise requires the one thing that every other Gerard Butler movie desperately goes out of its way to do.
Abs.
But this movie can't be bothered with. Which is, every other Gerard Butler movie at some point will go, no, seriously, we swear, he's American. He has this accent because...
Ah.
Plane goes, no, fuck you, he's Scottish.
I can be that. Now that was great. I did like that. At some point, he's even like, "We'll make sure that the haggis is thawed out, or whatever the fuck, you know." Like, and he gets a little offended at one point when the Malaysian pilot assumes that he is English. He's like, "Fuck no, fuck off." And it's like, that's great. That's fun. How dare you? How dare you though? Forget Joel Schumacher's Phantom of the Opera.
Oh, that's easy to forget because I didn't see it.
Where Jerry Butts, where our beloved Spartan King plays the Phantom and has to sing. You are my angel of the night, darkness. Sing to me.
I honestly thought you were going to go with where we're asked to believe that a Scotsman is French. I was honestly all prepared to go, oh, please, no one would even buy an Englishman as a Frenchman.
What have bright primary colors got to do with it?
Oh, I understand the illusion. Colors representing countries at a time when they competed with each other. Red, white, and blue for the United States. Whereas the French more properly used the same colors in the order, blue, white, and red.
And the German nation, red, black, and gold. The Italians, green, white, and red. The British...
That's enough, Data.
Yeah. No, it's great times. Terrible film. Terrible film. Worst Phantom ever. And that includes the time I saw Paul Stanley live.
Oh God. I didn't even know that was a thing. And I'm still immediately going, oh no.
Yes, yes. But this is kind of the perfect vehicle for buddy butts. There's a reason why this is practically, as I said, this is a has fallen film with a smaller budget and like a lower target. And it seems to be aware of that. And Jerry seems to be aware of that because he like picked this film. This is his film, damn it. As you say, he gave it its name. He made sure that it survived its cancellation during COVID and has actually rolled out. I feel like his artistic statement of we can still make normal old-fashioned films, and this is a very normal old-fashioned film. This film could have been made in the 70s. It could have been made in the 80s. It could have been made in the 90s a few ways. You were saying that in any other version of this, he's Sandra Bullock. But other version of this, he's Harrison Ford. And we're both right. They're just two different kinds of fucking films from the 90s.
Oh, like I'll keep that going because there are very, very basic similarities between Plane and Commando.
Yeah.
The second half of this movie is Commando. I'm sorry. And Gerard Butler is playing Ray Don Chong.
No, he absolutely is. This film was very smart in picking and choosing a few very specific things from what came before, and it allows it a more eager adaptability. Like, for some reason, I kept getting convinced that one of the people on the plane, like the passengers, somewhere in there is Telly Savalas. Telly Savalas has been dead for most of my life.
Oh, yeah.
But if this film was made before, like, 1980, whenever the fuck he dropped, Telly Savalas would have been on that plane, baby. And he would have gotten shot to fuck. Like, this is a beautiful ensemble film of nobodies.
Like, there was a casting agency somewhere, and to go back to your lowered budget comment, there was a casting agency somewhere that, for some reason, was having a special on bald white dudes, and Plane showed up with its checkbook.
Yeah, it picked a bunch of bald white dudes. I kind of liked how there was no payoff, but kind of like an interesting fake pseudo setup with like, wow, these two bald white dudes sure are shitheads. I can't wait to see them die. And then they never do. One gets shot in the leg, and that was nice. That was nice. But it's just the same with the co-pilot. There are so many times where it's just like, ah, you just told me that you have a young wife and kids. Ah, you're going to fucking die.
Yeah.
You're the, you know, like, The fuel line is essentially a bomb, and you're like often the voice of reason when they're flying. You're gonna fucking die. And he never died. There was a moment when like he's the first to talk to the terrorists. And it's like, okay, this is the moment when you get shot right in the face to make it clear that these terrorists aren't fucking about. And instead, they're kind of like, oh, that would be too obvious. Those two nameless fucks over there. And then no one else dies from, like, the hostage side, the entire film.
Yeah, yeah.
No one dies from, none of the mercenaries that come to save them die. No one else but the bad guys die. And it's just, that's a fascinating fucking choice. The plane does not explode. You'd expect that when they say, hey, by the way, the plane is essentially a bomb and we're returning to the bomb, it's going to explode, right? I was expecting that it would, when the mercenaries came across it and they were like snooping around and in it, I thought that at that moment, the fuselage was going to catch like a stray shot or something. It was going to kill the entire mercenary team. And that would then make, you know, Gerard Butler and the Foreign Legion guy have to be like, we're going to have to do it ourselves then. But no, it made like book logical decisions, because as we said, this is based off just like a burner novelist's idea, essentially for like a book they never wrote. Probably would have taken them a week. It's very bookish. It's very straightforward. And I kind of love it for it. I'm not going to remember this movie in 3 weeks.
Oh, no.
But I'm really happy
to
have it. It's an old-fashioned fucking thriller flick that you just doesn't mean anything to anyone except paychecks. Paychecks.
Yeah, it's just this fun popcorn film that like, there are numerous times where I'm going, I don't think that that's quite how that works. But I'm rooting for the characters to enough of a degree that not only did I forget those moments rather quickly, there was one giant one that didn't even occur to me as I was watching the movie.
Hmm.
Now, and this is something that I think, if you really think about it, if they had taken this into account, might potentially break the entire plot of the movie. But you know how it's such a big thing about how they have no idea where they are. They're breaking out the paper maps and doing all the geometry and so forth to try to figure out roughly what island they're on and so forth. Okay, now remember all that? None of that was necessary. They didn't, because, and I only realized this from reading the plot hole on IMDb, which is, did you also notice how many of the passengers had cell phones? And cell phones that had power?
Yeah, it's complicated because I think at some point they do say, like, there's no service.
Doesn't matter.
But yeah, you're right. They should still be pinging, like, a general location off those phones.
Just out of curiosity, I took my cell phone, I turned off the data, I turned off the Wi-Fi. Just to be needlessly thorough, I turned off Bluetooth, opened the Compass app on my iPhone, and was still able to get my exact coordinates.
Interesting. Well, you know, that's one of those things where, as we said, this is an older style like story, an older style film. And yeah, as Alfred Hitchcock said, that makes a more boring film, so that's why they didn't.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Sometimes you have to forget the magical supercomputer that we all carry around in our pockets and just be like, I'm a goddamn idiot, and wander off into the haunted house alone.
Oh, yeah, totally. It's, for me personally, it doesn't ruin the experience of the movie, but it's one of those, reading about it after, I'm like, okay, that's funny.
It's almost one of those things where at this point, it would make more sense to just have a little line of like text on the screen pop up and like dive into the old wardrobe or some shit that says 1992. And it's like, okay,
yeah, cool.
It took place before this thing that I can think of, this thing that I can think of, this thing that I can think of, you know, and throws it into a general, like, you know, post-Soviet chaos or what have you. The entire idea being there is no GPS, there is no internet, there is no cell phones, and what tracking technology they do have is far less advanced, blah, 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 blah. That's cool. Or set in the 70s and they crash in, I don't know, Cambodia. Something like that. There's a lot of options. There's a lot of play with this. It's a very, because this is such a plain movie, you can add any details, flourishes, and sprinkles that you want.
Oh yeah, and I love how it's just so, like, it's that cliche of, so, Butler plays a pilot, Brody Torrance, who, I know that if you're Scottish, that's exclusively a male name, but, and I did check just out of sheer curiosity, change the nationality, you can make that character female very easily. So, he takes off for a commercial flight run where he's now, at last minute, carrying a fugitive who's been caught by the FBI and is being transported back to the States. Again, I don't think that's quite how that works. It actually is
how that works.
Oh no. What I mean is, and
yeah,
obviously not an expert, but what I mean is, I'm fairly sure that at least the captain would have known about that ahead of time.
They did tell him technically ahead of time. But if he arrives late and he doesn't get the passenger manifest, he wouldn't know that. So, like, fair. He finds out when they get the passenger manifest. Yeah, no, it is kind of terrifying how slack-jawed a lot of things like that are. And I have both been on a plane when a prisoner was on it and I know a bunch of cops, and I've met one who was flying into town because they were with a prisoner who was being transferred that way. It's a trip.
Oh, yeah, and also, since you obviously know that, I'm also going to ask, now, on average, would that prisoner and the escorting officer not have been already assigned a seat?
Yes, and I kind of like how this film was so eager and it stayed on theme with explaining just how shitty this fucking company is. That he flies for. They're cheap to start with. They're idiotic. So they have they'll put out a flight into a storm that is like, what did they say? Not even a third or a quarter full. And their booking system is a fucking nightmare because it's just kind of like here, there, everywhere, whatever. Well, you sit there. That's already a side seat. Shit. It's a terrific clusterfuck that occurs in kind of like lower budget milk run, like plane runs and routes. I just love that I've completely seen as slapshod and shitty a, like, preparation. And that was only in fucking Montreal, let alone wherever the hell they are in the South Seas, completely ignored by their company because, as revealed by the movie, Brody Bro is, well, he's proactive when it comes to dealing with, say, you know, aggressive passengers. He chokeholded one out. And, like, that's a legit okay thing for a pilot to do. He hasn't hurt this man. He has stopped him from, like, becoming violent on a plane after he already assaulted the pilot, which, by the way, is a federal offense and gets you like 20 years immediately. No fucking way in hell this company would be like, oh, he's an embarrassment. Bust him down. No. He defended your goddamn airplane and kept you from getting sued by the families of everyone on it after this lunatic incapacitates the flight crew.
Yeah, and kind of keep going with it. This is also the company at one point where they've gotten all the passengers on the plane. They're getting ready to take off and make their escape. And the airline executive in the crisis meeting orders Brody to keep that plane on the ground and not move it. Like,
we have to do We have to do a full check, a safety check, or else we do. It's just like, it's brilliant because you can hear the actual lawyers saying that. You know, like in the back of your head going like, yes, there are absolutely policy shitheads at these kinds of companies who would be like, well, what about this? We don't want to get sued. And it's like, we're getting fucking sued already. We are fucked. The only thing that you can do now is mitigate how fucked we are. And I love that. So that shitty executive who was wonderfully played as like a punchable idiot. Like, I understand how you got to your position as like a junior vice president, but also you're a fucking moron. But I love that they played him against a character who, like, he's a crisis manager. He comes in and fixes things, and he clearly has more clearance in terms of like decision making power with the company than the idiot junior vice president. But did you notice something? The guy who plays the same caricature that Robert Stack plays in Airplane, a.k.a. the no-nonsense guy on the ground who's trying to talk them through the crisis, looked like fucking Robert Stack. This movie took pieces of Airplane and re-serioused them.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, the crisis, Scarsdale or whatever... Robert Stack, I really liked him as being just like constantly looking at the corporate assholes and being like, you're an idiot. You're an idiot.
But Hampton, the older bald dude.
Yeah.
He, aside from the crisis manager, he's the one who's the closest to common sense in that meeting room.
Until he becomes, like, just a dumb fuck. Because he's the one who's constantly, lower middle management starts off, and he's the guy who's just like, well, we can't, you know, it was my idea to send them through the storm. I mean, it was saving some fuel. And, you know, okay, that's bad idea one. You're out. Get the fuck out. So they bring in bad idea two, who is that guy, who is a little bit better, but he still makes stupid ass decisions like they have to do the inspection. They have to do the technical inspection before they fly, or else our policy is voided. And like, so you get like a three level, and at the end of it is Robert Stack. Capable, not dumb.
Yeah, but it was before that line.
Yeah.
Hampton seems remotely sensible. So hearing that, I almost wish the junior executive was still there and he was the one who says, no, we have to do this, this, and this, and go buy the book for these legal reasons. Because hearing that line from Hampton is weird.
Yeah, no, it should have been him instead arguing about it. And Hampton, Stack and junior middle management should have been arguing about, and Hampton should have been like, enough! We're doing whatever gets them out of here. Yeah, that's how it, I don't know why that scene just kind of falls apart, but it falls apart so badly that you literally thought a different character was saying something the opposite of it's like, the scene falls apart. But yeah, like, well performed from everyone in this. It's not a film that requires a lot. but it's competent. It just requires competency. And it's a competent fucking film. Yay! It's a rare thing, damn it.
Yeah, it's fun. And just to go back to this being the idea for like an airport burner novel, I love how you have like Deus Ex mercenaries, Chekhov's money bag.
Chekhov's ammunition bag as well.
Because that $500,000 those mercenaries are carrying in case they need to bribe people and so forth. And also, quick side note, as when Scarsdale realizes where the plane has landed, how fast he goes to extra legal options is kind of amazing.
I love that because it's one of those things where it's like, you know, if you are good enough at your job, then you can be like, oh, you're at, no, we're not going to get any extradition. We're not going to get any local help. We have to, like, no bullshit. We have to call mercenaries right
now. Exactly.
I really like the line of the lawyers should leave. It's just bad. We should hire some professional killers. Ooh, good idea.
Professional killers who are carrying $500,000 that this movie mentions over and over, but does a brilliant job of pacing those mentions out just enough that it doesn't get annoying, but by God, you are not going to forget that they have that money.
Yeah. Every now and then, just, and then it, you know, vanishes into the jungle along with our foreign legion friend. I really liked how it was just kind of like, bye. Okay. You're a character from a different book. In a previous generation, you would have ended up with sequels, and those sequels would have become like the main series, and people will have forgotten this ever existed. Yeah, like that. Off goes John Rambo. To have far more interesting adventures.
Oh, yeah, it's that very practical, if I get on that plane, I'm going to jail. And Brody has had enough adventures with this man, bonded with him enough that's like, all right, I get it. I didn't see anything. It makes sense.
Yeah. I was kind of expecting a line somewhere along, like, at the end of, like, hey, where'd the prisoner go? It's just, oh, he didn't make it. He died during the crash.
Yeah.
You know.
I think if the movie had been, like, 5 minutes longer,
that
scene would have been there. Because the way it ends with Brody on his phone talking to his kid, like, there's nowhere to put that moment.
Yeah. And it's true. Yeah, you kind of have to end. You have to end on that or else it feels weird. And if they don't essentially start a scene, like, with the question of, like, hey, where's this guy? It feels just odd placing it anywhere within the scene after that. So I kind of like how even the mercenaries, like, there's not even dialogue, they're just watching him like run off with the money, like, okay. And I was paid to get the passengers. No one said chase the fucking, you know, like, French legionnaire into the goddamn bush.
Well, you know what? Honestly, I think with the mercenaries, it's something even more basic than that, where they see him fighting alongside them. They recognize immediately he's a soldier.
Yeah, no, like, absolutely. There's a, you know, honor among whatevers
exactly.
And all that going on. And they definitely would not have been like, no, he has to come back here. It's just not how those characters were played. There was a way to make those characters kind of like insufferable douchebags, but they didn't. They chose to make them like professional, they're professional characters. It was kind of surprising. I was expecting either idiots, overconfident, who get themselves and other people killed, or like they could have just been like really super badass shitbags who like essentially overtake the film. Like, there's the problem is when you introduce like a cool hardcore band of mercenaries who are here to save the day, you have to make sure that they don't overshadow your hero and secondary even more badass hero, because you're loading up on steak. The first steak is a decent steak. Your second steak's a T-bone. And then for some fucking reason, you went back for a porterhouse. And it's like, why? You can't eat that much steak. Pick a steak.
Oh, yeah. No, like, this is one of those, I think, rare moments where a lack of character development is helpful.
Yes.
Because absolutely. The mercenaries are brought in. They're practical. They're professionals. They're there to do a job. That's all we know about them, which is all the movie does with them. They're there to just have a sniper with basically a cannon who goes, oh, you're hiding behind the truck. I'm just going to shoot through the truck.
Yeah.
Trick shots. No, I'm just going to power right through the vehicle.
Right, and like that's essentially his character. In a lesser or possibly braver film, they would have characteristics that would go along with that. Like, you know, the sniper would always chew bubblegum and speak like with a fucking hard Jersey accent or some shit. But no, he's a professional with a very large gun that he knows how to use against Toyota trucks.
And also, like, those moments where you see one of the mercenaries essentially run around to the side of the cover where these Filipino separatist forces are hiding behind their vehicles and start shooting them from the side. And it's just that little thing that not only makes complete sense, but I'm also going, I have done that exact same thing in Player Unknown's Battlegrounds so many times.
I mean, like, that. Yeah, there's a reason why a lot of this does feel like, you know, a cheap movie version of Far Cry. Because for the same reason, it's like, yep, you're fucking around with some basic tactics in a jungle. Where have I seen that before, aside from a shit ton of movies from the 80s? But it succeeds by just being so basic and not trying to be anything more than, I want to get home to my daughter. Okay, fair. That's all the character you know, growth you need. All right. We find out that the murderer who is on the plane only murdered for good reasons. So it's cool. They don't even need to have like a moment of, can I trust you? Am I sure I can trust you? And all that. No, it's just, yeah, all right. Fuck it. Sure. Even when the guy runs away and comes back later heavily armed, it's not like, how can I be sure he's not going to try to kill me? It's just, oh, then I... Hey, can I have one of those guns? Thank you.
Oh, well, I think that actually was the, oh, I can't trust you moment.
Yeah, I know. And it was so like, just like matter of fact without any like character struggle. That was kind of like, okay, you're not interested in that character dynamic. You just want to get to the next part. That's good because have a lot more fun with the next part.
Yeah, there's an efficiency there because I think that one moment is doing so many different things at once. It's that, oh, I can't trust you. It's the character bonding. It's learning about Mike Coulter's character, Louis. Like, you're getting a bit of backstory, not directly, but through his actions.
Yeah, and you're not getting, like, you're not getting exposition. You're not getting a dump. You're not, like... Oh, it, you know, it all began 20 years ago when it's like, oh, fuck off. You know, you're not getting too much. You're getting just enough of their current actions to be able to judge if they are good or bad. And that's it. Like, this is a guy, an escaped, two-time escaped felon, blah, 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 trained super mercenary, etc., who he could have just grabbed the money and run at his first opportunity. And the movie takes just a few seconds to show that of like, but he sticks around and fights it out and then takes the money and runs. And it's just,
yeah.
I feel like if this was the 90s, that would have been Steve Buscemi, and you would have felt a lot more throughout it that he would have just ghosted with the money and that he's making a moral choice to stay. Whereas this guy, you get the immediate feel, so that you don't have to think about any of that stuff, of like, oh no, he's staying. He's staying. It's fine. He's not even going to Han Solo, you know, where it's just like you fake out and then you come back. Not really. You kind of knew that he, you know, like, all right, technically he does that at the very end when they're flying, like trying to get up and the bad guy's got the RPG, right? But when he leaves the battlefield, it's like, okay, he's done his job. Good luck. Off he goes. We're not expecting him to come back, and he's not betraying us by not. That he came back to make sure that we were covered on our takeoff just shows how extra not a bad guy he was. And it's like, that's really interesting to just make what is supposed to be your scary wild card just so overtly like, no, he's a good guy. Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. It's fascinating. This film has potential to lay out a bunch of like, ooh, it could go this way, it could go that way. And it just goes, I don't have time for that. We're getting to the end.
Yeah, like, I mean, my only issue with that final action sequence essentially was the dude with the RPG. Because I'm watching these separatist guerrillas, and I kept thinking, These were your hostages. Weren't you trying to get them back so that you could sell them versus what you're actually doing, which appears to be trying to kill every single human in that area on both sides of the conflict?
Yeah, it doesn't seem... It's really fascinating, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like it goes back to what you were bringing up earlier about how they kept mentioning, if they hit the fuel tank, we're all gonna go up.
Yeah,
because it's that, you're firing an RPG at what is essentially the biggest and most powerful explosive you have ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you're pissed off. However,
it's definitely it's definitely like a desperation move of like, at this point, you don't even care. I mean, like,
yeah,
if you kill these people, the the American army is going to come down on you suddenly in the middle of the night, and you're going to spend the rest of your life in a very small box. It's going to be very uncomfortable. It's probably not worth it. So if you're going to kill them, why not do it in a blazing, fiery, you know, like cacophony that also takes you? It's probably for the best at this point. Because if they get away, you're fucked. And if they die and you're alive, you're fucked. I'm kind of disappointed that they didn't show the landing gear actually slam into him. But
yeah,
it's a pretty fun assertion, I suppose. You know, it asserts that that's what happens. You get an idea. He gets hit by a plane. Probably not going to walk it off.
And, well, I mean, also, technically, I don't think that they could send in American forces in the middle of the night for political reasons.
Oh,
but
yeah, no.
Because, it's the Philippines. Yes, it's the Philippines, but that's still kind of invasion-esque.
Yeah, but prove that they were there. That's one of those things where it's like, okay,
knowing
so
America, that probably wouldn't be hard.
Yeah, no, this is the kind of thing that has absolutely happened before.
Exactly.
You have an area of a country that is out of the control of the federal government, and American citizens have been murdered in it. They're going to cite, like, oh, they were drug traffickers. Under international law, we can hit them with a fucking missile. And it's like, yeah, good point.
Yeah. I mean, like I was saying, it's the Philippines, and I don't think the Filipino government is going to tell America no.
Yeah, or have the ability to tell them no.
China may start asking a lot of questions.
China can ask questions, but, you know, yeah. Like, let's not pretend China doesn't do the same.
Oh, no, totally fair. And, like, China knows that they can do it and nobody's going to say anything. But, I mean, at the same time, let's be honest, that involves a whole bunch of political-based questions that would be an entirely other podcast.
Mm-hmm. Fun ones, though. Also, a bunch of other kind of, like, burners. At some point, we should sit down and go through the Tom Clancy movies.
But I also couldn't help but think, yes, you may have lost your hostages, but at the same time, didn't you guys just get resupplied by American mercenaries? Because those dudes did leave a lot of equipment and ammo behind.
Mm-hmm. And they did get all of the passengers' stuff. Sweet iPads. I just loved how the terrorist, like, literally is just like, grab the iPads.
Yeah.
Get that shit.
And I mean, maybe that's not going to get you human trafficking money. However,
they're fun to use.
They're fun to use, and you are a separatist guerrilla force. I feel like guns and modern equipment might be kind of hard to come by, and there are crates just over there, chock full of it.
Yeah. That said, they are, you know, using American assault rifles, so someone's stocking them up with some nice shit.
Yeah, I kept seeing the M16s and thinking, shouldn't those be AK-47s?
Yeah, where's the AKs? AK is always the fucking short form for, like, they're the bad guys. They've got AKs, but our two heroes steal assault rifles from, like, random characters early on in the film, and they keep using those same assault rifles and are able to use the exact same ammunition that the mercenaries that their company sent in have a whole bag of. I'm out. Oh, you just use mine. It's like, well, isn't it fucking great that the terrorists and the mercenaries both buy from the same fucking gun store?
Well, if we learned anything from John Wick, you can mix and match your ammo cartridges.
You can jam that shit in it. Doesn't matter at all. No, it there's not at all, like, issues with, say, barrel width or even just getting the fucking clip to stay in a gun. No. If you just make it look cool enough, it all works. Oh, the clip fell out. I don't care.
And, I mean, also, let's be honest, this is very much the kind of cliche action film where we actually saw a character reload a weapon and we should be grateful for it.
Yes. No, that's very true. Like, this is, as silly as it is, it is more realistic in terms of action films. It does what it can to stick as close, like, because it's just a burner thriller novel, it sticks as close to kind of like realistic drama as possible. Our heroes aren't Superman, and the plane isn't going to suddenly fly to fucking Okinawa. It'll get 5 minutes of flight hobbling at like 100 feet off the deck. Great. That's enough. I kind of like that of like, this plane has already crashed. It is fucked up. So that it is capable of doing this is great. And I really liked when a nameless air traffic controller is just like, you need to climb to 4,000. Motherfucker, I cannot. You're at stall speed. Yeah. You think I don't know that? I'm in the fucking plane.
And Gerard Butler is doing all of this with a bullet in his shoulder.
Yeah.
That somehow he is still able to use like nothing happened.
I kind of really like there, a lazier script for this kind of film would have him break and call the air traffic controller all kinds of shit. But they allowed the character to stay in character as a professional pilot. And so they reiterate the information and then say, it is not possible. I cannot do this. Here is what I am flying at. It's like, that's great because it makes it feel realistic. You know, you never hear on a black box a pilot start just being like, well, fuck. You know, it's just not how they're trained. And so it's really nice to keep seeing that level of just basic understanding of like, here's a movie of professionals trying to fix a problem. The problem is silly, but here's the kind of people who would fix it, hopefully. It's so fantastically cliche, old-fashioned. I can almost smell the cigarette coming from the old used copy of this book printed in 1972. You know, like, it's been around in the hands of dozens of people. It's already sun bleached. And that smell of like cigarettes and cat urine will never leave this copy. This movie is cigarettes and cat urine. Like a good Stephen King.
And it's also a movie that is technically out of its time in that, and to add to your idea of being based on a novel written in the 70s. Now, as a professional pilot, one thing here is that there was one thing that nobody in this movie says, but a professional pilot absolutely would.
And what's that? Mayday.
At no point when they're relaying coordinates do you hear him say Niner.
Ah, Niner. I think that's because if you think about it, it would sound terrible in a Scottish accent. Niner! So they intentionally around it.
But you're probably right. Apparently, I guess 9 and 5 sound very similar over the radio.
Yeah, especially for international ears, like non-native speaking English. It's on issue.
Yeah. So like that's why any pilot will always, I cannot say always enough to sufficiently stress this, Niner.
Well, maybe they'll make a sequel, and it'll just be called Niner.
I mean, okay, that would be amazing. But also, there's no way that the script was not written pre-9/11. Because, speaking of things a pilot would never do, you know what a pilot would never do post-9/11? Leave the cabin!
This is also typically true. I've seen pilots leave the cabin since. I think it depends on the company and where you are. Because he's flying in the South Seas for a shitty company, it just comes down to like, you know, whatever. And he's the kind of guy who is just like, well, I gotta go take care of the business. you know, so off he fucks to do it. I've seen pilots. I've seen a pilot come out of the cabin to hit on a stewardess. So it happens, you know. Should it? Probably not. What's the policy?
No.
Probably not that. And yet.
Oh yeah, no, like I have no doubt that there are probably pilots who do it anyway, but I guess it's one of those that's not supposed to be a thing.
Yeah.
Do I care that he did it anyway? Fuck no.
No, and it I think it if anything, it's supposed to just show how, like, one, he breaks policy, like, don't leave the cockpit. And two, he is a guy who's just like, no, I'll do it. I'll do it. There's a rowdy passenger. I'll take care of it. You're the primary pilot on this plane. Nope. I'm going to go punch a guy. Yeah. it's like, fine. All right. There was a moment earlier on in this, and I was kind of waiting for a bit of a payoff. When they first fly into the storm and they have the one jump, and it's like, okay, one bounce, and he goes and checks on the passengers and he whacks his head something fierce.
Yeah.
I was expecting from that moment on until a ridiculous spot at the end for this all to be a hallucination, and like he wakes up and his co-pilot managed to land the plane perfectly fine. They did the entire route. It was fine. Nothing happened. No, we didn't land, and you didn't have to suddenly fight for our lives and go all fucking commando with the prisoner who turned out magically to be a super, like, Foreign Legion fighter guy who's actually super cool and now your best friend. That's ridiculous. That is fucking ridiculous. And I just wanted them to lean into the concept just a tiny shade more to make you question, was all of that in his fucking head? Is he just so bored and like annoyed at his job at this point for keeping him away from his family that he whacks his head and imagines this entire goddamn action film? That would have been kind of funny. Or even just the suggestion of it, of like he falls asleep, like, you know, he passes out having saved everyone. And when he wakes up, he like they're in a terminal or something. And he thinks, wait, was that all a dream? And then the reveal that, no, you actually did all that. I'm just surprised they didn't take that opportunity. But I guess in the same realm as, well, the plane didn't blow up either, despite how heavily they leaned into
the plane's
going to blow up.
And I don't have to agree with you because, quite frankly, this is one of those very rare movies where a twist like that, just from what we learn about Brody, I think that would work.
Yeah. Yeah, like he's at the point in his career where he's like, what am I doing? And so he imagines an incredible fantasy where he's actually, you know, like he does something that will get him the appreciation from the company he deserves. And damn it, it did matter that I'm a man of action. You shouldn't have busted me down. Like, you could see how they could have built this.
Oh, yeah.
And then they just didn't. It's like, okay, you've got pieces left. Okay.
Yeah, I think the only drawback with that would be if this were a fantasy, I don't think this movie suddenly becoming a Mike Coulter vehicle would work.
Yeah, it definitely wouldn't. And this is, as we said, like, it's meant to essentially introduce him to audiences as like, hey, this could be a potential action hero. Just saying.
Yeah, and I mean, quite simply... A Gerard Butler movie focused on somebody else entirely is just kind of more fascinating.
It really works. 'Cause while he's an interesting actor and I do enjoy watching him, he is at best when he's got a good foil or someone else. Like, That's why the Has Fallen series works, because there's usually like Aaron Eckhart there. You can't have his incredible Leonidas without anyone less than the over the top Xerxes. I love him in Beowulf and Grundle, the low budget shot in Iceland and Canada version that came out around the same time as that weird, creepy CGI Beowulf. And he's terrific in it. And it's because they pair him off with a bunch of like great Scandinavian actors. I think there's like three Skarsgård in that fucking film. That's a great value for your Skarsgård.
Well, I mean, you said it was at least shot somewhere in the general vicinity of Scandinavia, right?
Yeah, in Canada.
You're damn right there's going to be multiple Skarsgårds.
Skarsgård? What's the plural of Skarsgårdian? Skarsgårdians. There you go.
That's a Marvel spinoff waiting to happen. Right. If your film is like filming anywhere near like Norway, I think there's this two Skarsgård minimum. Sweden or whichever.
Whichever the fuck one they're from and are half the population of.
I said Norway kind of about halfway through the sentence, and I was like, wait, aren't they actually Swedish?
Let's just say they're Finnish. We'll finish by saying they're Finnish. There we go. But yeah, check out this film before it gets completely forgotten entirely, because it's not necessarily memorable. It's just enjoyable.
Yeah. And like many a Gerard Butler movie, you're going to remember that you had fun, but that's like it.
Yeah, that's about it. This is Plain! He kicks a guy off the back of it. I'm surprised that has never happened. Like, he's a guy who clearly enjoys having fun roles, but he never self-referentials. And, like, it would have been great if, like, a terrorist just hangs on to the back, like, a stairway of this, and he just, this is Plain, and kicks him in the fucking chest. And then like turns to a mercenary. Mercenary goes, did you just say this is Plain? And he goes, I was trying to come up with something smart to say. I'm really fucking tired at this point.
Well, he couldn't have used get off my plane, because then Harrison Ford would sue.
Exactly. So like like having it be, oh, I was trying to think of like, you know, a good line like get off my plane, but it's been done. Plain! Just kicks people. Every time he fires a gun, instead of going bang, he goes, plane! Plane, plane! Plane! Plane, plane!
And I mean, again, a one-liner that had more thought put into it than this is Plane would require more effort than this movie was going to put out.
Yeah. This is a wonderfully low-effort film that just, it does what is necessary, and nothing more, in the best possible way. It's a happy meal. It's a happy meal.
Yeah, and also there's the simple fact that at no point in this review did we stop to explain the plot of this movie. We have instead basically spent the entire review explaining the plot of this movie.
more like luxuriating, I find.
It's
so straightforward and by the books, by the numbers, and what changes it makes aren't even twists. It's just, oh, I thought that was your exit. No? Oh, okay. Well, I don't know what map you're using. Okay. But yeah, that was fun. Forgettable, and especially on a day when Oscar noms rolled out. So I wonder what exciting nonsense we will be watching next.
well, I know I had initially said the Mark Hamill B-movie slipstream, but we're actually going to put that kind of off to the side for a while, because based on what I want to do for February for my birthday, we're not going to have time to do it.
Damn it.
Because as of this recording, our New Year's Evil review still hasn't come out. And then this one's got to come out. And for my birthday, specifically on the week of February 9th, I wanted that week for us to be able to do... we're finally going to Asylum.
We can just switch the release around and make sure that we do that.
I wanted to start the... Well, I was going to say month, but thanks to things like Ant-Man and Cocaine Bear. Needless to say, the list of films that I have in mind, we're going well into March.
That's all right.
All right, but we are actually going to be starting my birthday month with the first Asylum Studios film I ever saw, which is Nazis at the Center of the Earth. And I will explain this more on the review, but needless to say, there is a reason that I wanted this specifically on my birthday week.
Interesting. Curiouser and curiouser. I haven't seen that one. I've seen the ones about Nazis on the moon, but not the ones about Nazis living deep beneath the earth. Please let me know. Is there a Nazi riding a T-Rex in this? I feel like nope. This is a good excuse for a Nazi riding a T-Rex. That is a shame.
There's no Nazis riding a T-Rex. Hitler is going to give you a few opportunities by accident to make Iron Man references. However, There's no T-Rexes.
Well, I'm intrigued.
And the best way I think that I can put it with this movie is this. It's not Iron Sky dumb. It's Iron Sky hilarious.
Ooh. All right. Well, that is something to look forward to next week. Or whenever the fuck this episode, next episode, and that episode goes out. Because it's been a month. If you have any complaints about that release schedule, one go fuck yourself too. You can contact us at yeah.
We can be reached for those complaints, comments, questions, whatever, at realgeekshfx@gmail.com. Complaints will end with us doing an email show of us repeatedly saying we both work full time, there ain't nothing we can do here.
What do you want? Go away. What do you want? Go away.
You can reach us on Twitter at RealGeeksHFX. And also, since I noticed we do have a few ratings, if you are listening to us on Apple Podcasts, please rate and review. We're at about 3.75 out of 5 right now, which is a nice spot.
Not too bad.
I mean, I would love for us to be at 5, but I would rather honest reviews, because to the person who gave us 1 star, I would like to say, like, if you have ideas for things we can do better, we are happy to listen, because just clicking on that 1 star doesn't mean a goddamn thing.
Yeah, 1 star is gonna 1 star. Frankly, I'm just happy to get a star. Because
exactly.
If you're reviewing us, then at least we got your attention. Hey.
And our 5 stars do outnumber you, so suck it.
Yeah, yeah.
To continue, I can be reached directly at the Mara Time Lord on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, Hive, when Hive will actually let me log in. That's a whole thing. Or over email at themaritimelord@gmail.com.
And I can be reached on Twitter at Friday in Halifax and Crash and Burn everywhere else. Played!